Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
The future is cashless, according to Mashable, especially if Visa has anything to say about it. The credit card and payments company is urging restaurants to stop accepting cash with its new Visa Cashless Challenge, which comes with a $10,000 prize. Jack Forstel, Visa's head of global merchant solutions, said in a statement, which I presume is what you have, because you said you had something from directly from Visa. He said, quote, "At Visa, we believe you can be everywhere you want to be, and that it should be easy to pay and be paid in more ways than ever, whether it's a phone, card, wearable, or other device. With 70% of the world, or more than 5 billion people, connected via mobile device by 2020, we have an incredible opportunity to educate merchants and consumers alike on the effectiveness of going cashless." Now, isn't there a bit of a contradiction in that statement? He says that it should be easy to pay and be paid in more ways than ever. Then he lists a few things, phone, card, wearable, or other device, but then goes on to say that you shouldn't accept cash. So you should get paid in more ways than ever, except cash.
Well, their argument is that it's time-consuming and difficult to accept cash, which there's something to be said for that, but it's not. They're making it out to be like it's this big drawn-out thing, and it's really not.
I don't buy the claim that on average credit cards are faster. In fact, if anything, they seem slower now with the damn chip thing. Have you experienced this with the chip?
I don't. I think that's a transitional issue. Uh-huh. First of all, it seems to me that all the chips are not set up to force accept.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Okay, so if you go and slide a credit card at a Walmart or wherever,
yeah,
it takes like 2 seconds, and the reason it is because it's not communicating to your bank, asking your bank, is this money here? Your bank's saying yes, and it's sending it back. It's just saying, if this is a real card, force accept it. If it's declined later, we'll take the hit.
Are you sure about that? I mean, because generally when we've got a merchant service provider here with Free Talk Live, we don't have a point of sale device, but we of course have.
Right. Well, that
online.
Would be the only reason to have one.
I was thinking about the Visa when you were talking about that. I work over the road. When I go in places, I tend to just use cash.
Yep.
You know, if you get the slip and it says, you know, fill out the, you know, amount you want to tip and so forth, that's also something to take more time because they got to re-enter it.
Right.
But, you know, if it's like $13, people will figure up 20, you know, 20%, you know, and just write that in. If it's like $13 and I give them a 20, a lot of times I'm like, hey, just keep the change, hun, especially if they were good. I'm wondering how that's going to affect their tipping, where people will either just put the zero in or just do the 15 or 20%.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To be more generous with cash.
Yeah, and if these are sit-down places, they're going to have a hard time keeping good waiters. Because if the feds are taking 15 to 20% of all of your tips, mm-hmm. that's a big pay difference than if the feds are taking 15 to 20% of your credit card tips.
Great point, because you can easily pocket cash right. at the end of the day. And, you know, a credit card tipper, that's going to take a little bit of time to settle out, right? Like, do they settle the credit cards right. out with cash at the end of the night for their you know, their employees, or do they have to wait till the end of the week to get that settled on a paycheck?
But my daughter waitress, sometimes it was the next day when mm-hmm. she was in high school.
You asked me about a week and a half ago if they ever made a law to where we'd have to, law enforcement have to go in and take away take away guns from people legitimately and, you know, according to the feds. And I wanted to get back to you on
sure.
that. My answer would be absolutely not.
You would not
because
take
I
away
took an oath.
Guns, is what you're
no,
saying.
No, because I took an oath to protect people, and people have a right to protect themselves. And the fact is I know a lot of people that are responsible that have guns that I don't feel as a threat, but I think they have a right to protect themselves in a situation, life and death situation.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Would you also apply that to people like felons, people who've been diagnosed with a mental illness, people who've been convicted of misdemeanor domestic battery, any other people who are otherwise prohibited right now?
Well, in the situations, and that's a good question, because that was the one that I took a long time to think about. I think, like in any other situation, you'd have to take that case by case. You couldn't just generalize in that. I mean, look how many people are out there that are, you know, like you were saying, that have a felony against them that have nothing to do with violence or something in that regard.
So you're saying that you yourself...
They're not a threat to society.
So like Mark, our co-host, who's normally here on Monday nights, he's ill today, so he's not here with us. But
Well,
he's a felon. He went to prison for what was a supposed violent crime, even though he didn't actually commit it. He just was there during it and didn't rat on the dude. He made a stupid mistake. But now he's got a family.
Well, and he was also underage at the time.
True, but they still put him in prison for 9 years.
I got a question, because this kept coming up in my mind, okay? Being in what... Why would a felon have a gun when they know that they'd be violating their...
They might want to protect their family or protect themselves.
And in some cases, I believe in the last, say, 40 years, because I did some little background... In 40 years, how the laws have changed in this gun control situation is, in my eyes, has gotten out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
because they've made it more easier for people that shouldn't have guns on them. And it's I've been doing this for a long time, and I've seen the increase of violent crimes. I've seen the increase of guns. Weapons used in crimes and people using to intimidate and to promote violence towards people. It's a real sad situation.
Well, right, because if
I've watched.
If most of your sales are white markets and the leader of whatever local gang walks in and says, "I'd like to buy 7 Glocks," the store owner might very well tell him, you know, get out my store. Whereas if it's impossible to get a license, like in Chicago or something like that, and so everything's black market,
mm-hmm.
then you already have somebody who's taken an immense risk, and they might not turn those people away. So the more regulations...
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Chicago, because I have a very dear, close friend who's a retired police officer in Chicago. Well, I've worked out with him in Arizona. He was my partner for a long time.
To me, if you want to incentivize a business to go that direction, you ought to offer to waive the fees below certain values of charges, because that's the reason why you see a lot of signs up at businesses. I still see this from time to time, where a business will have a sign up. I think the local ice cream shop, and we went there the other day for the Bitcoin meetup, we noticed that there was a sign saying that credit cards would not be accepted beneath a certain value. I think it was like $7 or $10 or something like that, because they're hitting you with a 3% fee on all of those transactions, and you know, on low dollar fees, if you're buying a $3 dish of ice cream, that's digging into the profit margin that business owner has on that ice cream, and it hurts at the lower levels, the lower dollar amount. So business owners are frequently posting signage about, hey, you know, if you're going to be buying $10 or less, I can't take a credit card because it's just not worth it. There's too many fees. And some credit cards not only have a 3% fee, but there's also a per transaction fee or a per day settlement fee or whatever. So there's all these fees that are involved in accepting credit cards. If you really wanted to encourage a business that is currently has cash customers, like a restaurant would, to cut that out, you'd really have to, I would think, make it a better offer than you might win at $10,000. How about we'll go ahead and waive any credit card fees on any purchases under $5 or $10.
I wanted to say real quick on the as far as percentage of on a food truck.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, it would be 75% or more.
Are what? Not paying? What? 75% or what?
With credit card.
You think
with
so?
Credit card, man. Yes, everybody pays with credit card. I mean, if we're talking dollar amount instead of number of transactions, I would imagine it's over 75-80%.
Wow.
Because people spend more on a credit card, and they're just more willing to buy something, you know, if they have that piece of plastic in their wallet than if they have to break, you know, Mr. Alexander Hamilton in their pocket or whatever, you know. So
I mean, I think it'd be interesting to hear from people in the food truck business if anybody happens to be listening. But that's interesting. I mean, you work in banking, so you probably know a thing or two about selling credit cards.
I used to work with restaurants and our bank did merchant processing and and I would they would tell me 85% of their businesses, and I mean maybe the tips are left in cash, but most of the bills are paid on credit card at a restaurant. So in terms of dollar figures. So
yeah, I could see it being more of them at a restaurant, but I mean food truck. I guess I just don't. When I think of food truck, I think people paying cash at like county fairs or whatever.
You mentioned the cashless society there, and I think it's more of a cash grab than a cashless society. You know, I mean, they make a ton of money off of these credit card processing fees.
Oh yeah,
but a lot of people don't understand that it's very confusing, and they it's almost like they make it that way. And it's a risk-based pricing model. So depending on how much information you enter on the transaction, the less money you're going to pay for that transaction, because the less of a risk it is to Visa or whatever to process it, consumer chargebacks and people claiming that their credit card was used fraudulently, and that's a huge problem in the industry.
Okay, so that's interesting, because I didn't know that. As somebody who doesn't take credit cards in a point of sale location, but we do take them over the AMP program at amp.freetalklive.com. When we signed up for that through, I think it was authorized.net as our merchant provider or gateway or whatever you call it, they pretty much only have one plan, and that's 2.9% and Visa, MasterCard, and I think they might have added American Express later, but that's it, and you don't get any options.
So there's you need to shop that. There's a ton of competition out there for processing, and there's three different pricing models. I won't bore you with the details, but the best one is called Interchange Plus Pricing. So just look for that, and you'll get one of the best deals. Especially they're charging you cost plus. There is absolutely no competition in payment. They say that there is, Visa, MasterCard, whatever. That's not competition. That's your piece of plastic in your wallet. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies and other payment methods, in my opinion, are the wave of the future. Some of these payment apps that are coming out, like Venmo, and some of them that make it really kind of cool and fun to pay money to your friends or to other businesses, I think those are going to be the way to go. So, just wanted to close with that.
Cool. Hey, thanks for the advice, the suggestions, the info. Thanks, Libertarian Banker. That's not to say that, Bitcoin is in any time soon going to supplant cash, but it is, I think, a much better choice than Visa, because when you use cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or Dash or some of the others, there is a fee involved, yes, but the fee is much smaller generally than the Visa fees. It's certainly much smaller at the higher dollar levels with Bitcoin. Bitcoin fees are one of the issues that has been plaguing it recently, but even so, in most transactions, Bitcoin's going to be cheaper than Visa. And most importantly, the merchant receives 100% of the sale. So even if the fee is a little high for Bitcoin, as we've seen with some of the problems it's been having with its growing pains, it's still the merchant's getting the full amount of the sale, unlike with a credit card where the merchant is paying out of. So if you're buying a dollar soda down at the local corner shop here in Keene, and if you're paying with a credit card, presuming they even accept a credit card for a dollar level sale, because some businesses don't, then they're going to be paying 3 cents to the credit card company for that, maybe plus 10 cents, because sometimes there's a per transaction fee. I mean, again, it depends on what their deal is, but there's a chunk of that transaction that's going to go to the credit card company, whereas if they're receiving Bitcoin from somebody, they get a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. It's very simple, and it makes it a lot better for the business owner, because that's more money that they can keep in their pocket. That's more money that they can put back into their business, that they can use for a vacation to give their employees a raise or give themselves a raise or whatever. One of the things that we've seen happening here in New Hampshire, and I talked about this with Joel Valenzuela from Dash Force News the other day on a podcast that he did, where we got into detail about what it's like to kind of spread cryptocurrency to business owners. It definitely helps when you have more than one person who's willing to say something to a business owner. Because if the business owner has heard it more than once from more than one customer that they want them to accept cryptocurrency, that's going to make it much more likely that they're going to take it seriously.
And maybe if it's not a recognized activist, if it's not like
maybe.
You going in every time, maybe that would help.
For sure. And it's not just me, thank goodness, because here in New Hampshire, we've got a large cryptocurrency population, if you will, fanatics that are out there. In the Keene area, we've had such success that we've been able to make Keene, which is the city in the southwestern corner of New Hampshire, the most Bitcoin-accepting city as far as businesses per capita are concerned in the entire world that I can tell. Because San Francisco is supposedly number one, but we beat them by a factor of like four as far as Bitcoin businesses per capita. And that's just because we've got a core group, not a large group, but a core group of maybe 5 to 10 real good Bitcoin advocates.
Badges don't grant rights, right?
Sure. So do you have a right to just go up and pop a cap in anybody else?
Absolutely not. But you know, that's
you
that's
do
not my point.
If they're actively and ongoing aggressing against you.
Mm-hmm. So if a cop's just standing on the corner looking around, is that actively ongoing aggressing against you?
If nothing else, they are committing assaults. They are never not committing assaults.
How are they
I wouldn't go that far, but Melanie, I'm halfway there with you. My point is that later on the same show, there was a cop. I guess he's also what you would call a chronic caller. And, you know, everybody that was on the panel did everything but trip over themselves to lick the boots of this guy, like, saying there should be more cops like him, even as he was saying he would forcibly take the guns that you have admitted to have. Right. He said,
you mean the same cop that called in tonight to say that he actually thought about it and he wouldn't?
Oh, really? He did that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is excellent news, right?
Yeah.
And he should really talk to his buddies on the force like that and right before he quits, right? You know, because I don't know.
But that's where I disagree with you. I mean, we're not going to lick boots on Free Talk Live, but if a cop comes on the air and says he's going to look the other way if he, you know, pulls over some teenager who's got a joint in the ashtray and he's not going to do anything about it, I'm going to say thanks for that because
right,
he could have arrested
that's
him.
That's not really particularly commendable. If you have a cop who's willing to have a discussion with you, absolutely have that discussion. That's not necessarily where I focus my efforts for multiple reasons.
Well, you can't have a discussion with a cop if you've already blasted his head off with a shotgun.
Right,
yeah,
but
man,
it's that. Right, okay, but see, here's the thing, though.
I agree with you, Melanie. I mean, I see where you're going. But you know what, Melanie, ultimately, you only have to follow around for a few minutes on average, probably, before they're already aggressing on somebody.
Right.
As soon as they say, no, thank you. Yeah, fair game.
And that's a practical strategy. And that, you know,
wait,
is
what's
valid.
A practical strategy to follow
no,
a cop
not,
around
it's,
and,
it,
and commit
it's not practical
acts
in
of
the
violence?
Sense that it is practical to do it. But that's a strategic position.
If you want to start a war.
Right.
That would be a strategic position if you want to start a war.
It's not a good strategy.
Okay.
It's a strategic
okay, good.
Position.
At least we can agree
okay,
on
so
that.
So whether or not something violates the NAP has nothing to do with either whether it's a good idea or whether it's a good thing to do. If somebody pulls a gun on you and says that they're going to kill you, you don't have to wait for them to actually pull
that's
the trigger.
True. That's true. That's an active threat.
That's a threat.
Yep.
If they pull out a gun and say, I'm going to kill you unless you give me your wallet... That is a conditional
threat. Yeah.
So, and it doesn't matter if they say it in English or if they communicate using some other form. If there was some gang who went around and they used a particular symbol to communicate, I'm going to kill you unless you give me your
like
wallet.
Turning on lights.
Turning on lights or putting on a badge or wearing a particular uniform. That's still a threat. It might be at best if you have a police department without corruption, which I understand, you know, maybe a lot of them are that way.
They're all corrupt at some level, I'm sure.
Oh, right, but they're not all planting drugs on you necessarily.
True.
Like
that's true.
At that level,
I've been arrested multiple times, and no one's ever planted drugs on me
or any other kind of lying about kind of. There are police departments that are more like chaotic evil and they'll just do anything they can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And there are police departments that are more lawful evil where if you are breaking the law, they will arrest you.
Yeah.
With the latter, at least you can kind of plan for that. They're still both evil, though. We spend a lot of time talking about, you know, drugs and everything else, most of which of those are a bad idea. But we're against the war on drugs because...
But there's a difference between being clear on what the non-aggression principle is and how it should apply across the board
and at the same time sounding like you're advocating the killing of police. Like, you're not doing that because you're making it clear that this is a bad idea. The things I, Melanie, am talking about is not something that I recommend anybody do. You've made that pretty clear. But Tom, who is our caller that the last guy was referring to, David was referring to a guy named Tom who calls the show fairly regularly, probably at least once a week. And he's frequently just lauding the people who kill the cops. And he's not going to go out and do it himself. But he just loves to relish in it whenever it happens, as though, you know, it's like the first step towards some sort of revolution that's going to overthrow the violent state. And I just don't agree that it's going to do those things.
Right. And I don't think we're there yet. I think that that is going to be at some point 500 years from now a necessary step, because I don't think they're going to give it
fight,
up.
To actually fight the state.
Yeah, because I don't think that they're going to give it up. If they do, I hope I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but I don't see that. I don't see Janet Yellen being like, okay, you win, I'll go home now.
This is, in my opinion, the problem with the nap.
The non-aggression principle.
Because
I love naps.
Right.
I think they're really nice to take naps.
Naps are great.
But yeah, you're talking about the non-aggression principle, which is the basic principle that is behind the libertarian movement. The non-aggression principle says that it's not okay to aggress against your peaceful neighbor in an attempt to get that person to do something or not do something or whatever. For whatever the reason, it's just not okay to use aggressive force.
Right. But the term aggressive force is so vague because there's defensive aggressive force, and so that you can actually have a position like Melanie's that you can kill cops who that day did not threaten anybody, but they could be threatening someone sometime, and so you can just kill them. Why don't you torture them first? That's even cooler, isn't it?
Okay, well, whether or not it's cooler, so it would not be prohibited by the nap. The thing that people kind of, in my opinion, either forget or ignore whatever they do about the nap, is that it's not really a complete life philosophy. If the only value you're following is the nap, you're going to be a horrible human being who probably just needs to go get their own planet because you shouldn't be here.
I'm a libertarian, I claim, but I'm a libertarian for entirely different reasons than the nap. I'm a libertarian because it leads to better outcomes. Certain things, when the government lays off of them, lead to better outcomes, more health, public health.
Well, that would make you a utilitarian in that particular case. You would be applying a certain principle only so far as you believe that it created a better outcome. A libertarian, a true libertarian in my mind, is somebody who adheres to the non-aggression principle, no matter if they believe that it will have a worse or better outcome. They just simply believe that that is an important principle and that they will remain adhered to it. So you don't get to pick and choose.
I respect your point of view. I respect your point of view, but the definition of libertarian is centuries old. And first, there were socialist libertarians. Secondly, there are consequentialist libertarians. Milton Friedman explicitly is a consequentialist libertarian. His protege, Thomas Sowell, is a consequentialist libertarian. They argue for less government, but they argue on the basis of outcomes because there are better outcomes. And I'm just saying,
well, that's a point that you can use those points to persuade people about whatever the libertarian solution is. But again, one of the objections that Mark, our normal Monday night co-host who's here with us, has asked, or one of the things he's pointed out, is, well, if it turns out that liberty doesn't result in a better outcome in some area, would you support using coercion in that area? And I say no.
I was just studying for comprehensive exams, and I came across this meta-analysis on police use of force. And what it looked at was the wearing of the body cameras.
Okay.
And what it found was that it neither decreased police use of force, and it actually increased the assaults against officers. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that finding.
Body cameras increased the use of force and increased assaults on officers? Is that what you said?
It increased assaults on officers and did not decrease use of force by police on the public.
That's funny. So this is a meta analysis of multiple studies looking at this.
Yes. So multiple quasi experimental designs where they had an experimental group and a control group, and they analyzed these 10 different sites and found this. And I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were on this, because it was kind of surprising. And I'm still looking at the other research.
This I remember when we were reporting on these, there the initial reports, at least, from departments that had utilized the body cameras was that the use of force incidents had gone down.
Yeah.
Like significantly.
In 2015, Rialto, they did a study.
Yeah.
And that was one study in Rialto. Yeah. And then this was in 2016, and there's been more studies since then.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.